Tell me just a little bit about your dad. What did he work? What did he do for the Rock Island? And what years was he with the railroad?
He worked for a railroad as long as I knew. Even before I was born, he was working for the Rock Island Railroad. In fact, there was a letter or something he called home. He was in Tupanquiri, New Mexico, working for the Rock Island. And he asked my mother, he says, how's my baby, new baby boy? And they conversed back and forth. He was laying steel on the steel gang then. And I asked Dad one time, I said, Dad, what did you do during the Depression? I was born in 33. And he said, I had a job. He said, I was one of the lucky ones. I said, how much did you make a day? He said, 8 cents an hour. He said, that's 64 cents a day. I had my five brothers, their wives, and their children move into my home, and 64 cents a day fed them. And they didn't have jobs either. So he said, that's where I was in the Depression. He says, had a job. He said, you had a job. He said, that first thing came out of your mouth. I got a job. Yeah, I've got money to buy some food. You know, might be a nickel for a dozen eggs or this and that. And then there was my dad. He elevated on up from section hand to section foreman to track supervisor to assistant roadmaster to roadmaster, which he was the roadmaster. He worked out of that building down there where the sign's going to be. His office was on the end next to the Clinton Library, that end. And he took care of all the track maintenance from Little Rock to Memphis. The track, all the... He had section gangs, like I say. One gang could see the other gang. He had a lot of men. Yeah, I'd stand back on... He'd take me every once in a while on the passenger train. We'd stand out on the back, and the train was rocking along, and he'd get out his notebook, and I didn't feel anything, but he did, and he'd write it down, what milepost it was and everything, and he knew where the gangs were. I said, what are you doing there? He said, I'm going to throw off this butterfly, and he'd get it ready and everything. We'd be on the back, and about that time a gang come in view, he'd throw it right down on the track where that rough spot was or dip spot or what he was feeling on the track, and he knew his track. In fact, he told me a story about Uncle Aud. His brother finally made general roadmaster, and he was stationed at El Reno, A.J. Winters. And they were on the passenger train, and the war was on. And these upper echelon officers of the Rock Island come down to ride the train, and of course they had to ride with them. And any questions come up about the track or anything, they'd refer to them. Like locomotives, they'd refer to me, or engineer handling. And they were all standing on the train, and I think it was a vice president. He wasn't the president of the railroad, he was vice president. He says, those Marines aren't worth a GD. And Aud hit him, knocked him clean off his feet, said he went flying. Yeah, and she knew my Uncle Aud. In fact, when she shook hands with him, she said, I don't want to shake hands with him anymore. My hand disappears in his hand. He was a big man. Oh, he took...
But his son was
dead
on the Marine.
Yeah.
That's the reason
died on Iwo Jima.
Oh,
yeah, wow. He just died on Iwo Jima. And when that vice president says, the Marines aren't worth a GD, boy, Aud, he hit him, he knocked him down, and they And he's laying on his back, knocked him clean off his feet, and he said, what's the matter with that fella? And the people was picking him up and said, you said the wrong thing. You said the wrong thing. He just lost his son on Iwo Jima. Yeah. And Odd says, if he gets up again, he says another word, I'll throw him off the train. And Odd was big enough to throw him off the train, too. He was a big man. I mean, he must have stood 6'6". And, he was much of a man. Yeah. But everybody said, he didn't fire that family.
Did you work with your dad any there at the depot, or did y'all cross paths work together any?
Oh, we'd see each other when I was fireman. I don't think he was alive when I was promoted to engineer, but he'd see me on the engine. I'd pass him, he'd be on the ground talking to some of his men. He'd go out with his automobiles. I knew he didn't know I was on a train. I'd wave at him. Geraldine was the superintendent's secretary. Yeah, my sister was. Yeah, at Little Rock. Yeah. I had it was a pack of winners. But like I say, it was nepotism.
Yeah.
But Geraldine was well qualified, shorthand. She could take shorthand and everything with the best of them. And Daddy popped his mouth off one time. He passed that superintendent. Oh, he got up in a meeting. Yeah, it was a meeting, staff meeting. And Pastor said something about his railroad. And I won't repeat, and I never have in front of you, what Daddy said back to him. And man, a couple of the fellas took him out. It was in a motel. They took him. He said, he'll fire you. He said, I still stand. He don't know nothing about railroading or track or nothing else. And I imagine Dad was right, because Dad come up from the bottom. He knew that track. But he told Pastor, you don't know. I'll never repeat it in front of you. Well, he told him, you don't know nothing. Yeah, in worse words. So he had temper, you know, had an Irish temper. Irish and Cherokee, that's what we are. Yeah, so.
Can you tell me the story you were telling before we started recording about what the porter there at the Little Rock Depot?
Oh, Robert. Yeah, old Robert. I didn't know too much about Robert, but Geraldine, of course, worked upstairs for the superintendent. Robert was downstairs, and he had his red cap on, and he always stood out on the platform, and he'd look across that bridge, and you could watch him and tell when he saw a train. But he'd run back in the waiting room, and he'd put his spiel out. I forgot everything he said about him, but everybody loved Robert. And he was spooky, and they found out he was a little spooky. So they set him up, all the people that liked him and everything, and they said, Robert, your telephone over here in the phone booth. Everything. He said, who is it? He said, well, he asked for you, Robert. Come over here and talk to him. And he got in that telephone booth, and this fella says, Robert, this is Charlie. And Robert said, Charlie who? They left the door open where they could see him. They're afraid he's going to hurt himself. And he said, Charlie McLaman. And he said, you could see it. And he said the words were, he's almost turned white. He was pretty dark complected negro. And he had to run away out of that booth. And he ran out the front door of the station. The dead man called him. and had been dead for about a week or two, but one of Charlie's friends. And they laughed about that. Another time, they found a dead lizard that had been run over by a car, and they put it in the baggage claims and stuck them in the middle of all the claims that you tie on your suitcase. And they said, Robert, here. And they put it in his pocket. And He was talking about the trains and everything. He said, let's see what you can. I said, Robert, have you stole something from the Rock Island here? And he said, no, I didn't stole none. He said, look in your pocket. Look in your pocket. And he got in his pocket, and he got the baggage claims out. Nothing. He said, see, there's just these baggage tickets. Put a bag in your pocket. No, we think we saw something in your pocket. Pull them out again. He pulled them out again, fanned it out, and that dead lizard popped up. He threw those baggage claims straight up, and away he went. They were always pulling tricks on him, but he was good-natured. He was good-natured.
You know what I remember about him? He come in all aboard?
Yeah.
He
had a way of saying all aboard. Yeah. And he had a spiel with it, and it was enjoyable. Calling out city names, yeah, away from, but he'd call them up the lines. Yeah, I know he was using Shawnee and Oklahoma City and Tupancari, and yeah, but there's the places closer where we had train stops.